Each year, the season of Lent begins with a gospel reading about Jesus' experience in the wilderness, where he spent 40 days. This is to prepare us for the season that stretches in front of us now. The 40-day sojourn in the wilderness gave shape to the 40 days of the Lent season as the practice developed. As Jesus was 40 days in the wilderness, so we take 40 days of the year in Lent as a spiritual season of repentance, self-examination, special devotion to Christ, and special generosity and compassion to others. Lent can be a season to endure begrudgingly or mostly ignore it if you wish. Protestants have a long history of such. And there's grace enough for all on Easter Sunday. But for those who enter into Lent in any way, often through fasting or some other kind of self-denial or through spiritual disciplines, the season has a wilderness-type edge to it. Fasting of any kind brings about some hunger and some discomfort. Self-denial brings about a longing for comforts, especially if you've drifted through the year into patterns of ease and habits of self-indulgence. And most of us do this. We want something to make us happy. Say, coffee, for example. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, there will be no giving up coffee in our household for the season of Lent. I'm using as an example. Maybe you need to give up coffee, but we can quit anytime we want. So this is not on the table here. But it does work for this example. It works for this psychology. We want something to make us happy. We get that thing that makes us happy. Then we need that thing to keep from being unhappy. And then we want something more to make us happy again. It's how coffee works. It's how lots of things work that become habits in our lives. And it's how the treadmill of consumption works psychologically. Lent can be a resetting of the basic ordering of life. What I really need, some coffee, versus what I think I want, gallons of coffee. Substitute just about anything else here, including serious, very serious things. Simplicity then makes space for generosity. And all this can be a spiritual renewal and a reset. If you want to think of it this way, it's like a spring cleaning for our souls. No doubt there's some work in that, and there's also real pleasure in getting back to the basics, keeping the main thing the main thing. All those cliches point to something true embodied in a wilderness experience. But wilderness is not another name for a spiritual day spa. It's rugged, it's tough, and it can eat you alive. As Belden Lane plainly puts it in his Spirituality of Fierce Landscapes, wilderness doesn't care about you and what you bring to it. That kind of terrain is often a marvelous antidote to the problem of the ego. Wilderness is the geography of Lent. After his baptism, Jesus goes into the wilderness. The Gospel of Mark puts it more directly. He was driven into the wilderness by God's Spirit. If you've been driven into the wilderness of Lent or some kind of wilderness of life, you're not the first, and you're not alone. Jesus has been there. Jesus, may we say, is there with you. The writer Wallace Stegner saw the wild open places of the western United States in these kinds of spiritual terms. Advocating for their protection and preservation, he said, we need those wild spaces. We need to know they're still there, even if all we ever do is drive to the edge and look in. You may intend to just drive to the edge of Lent and look in, or you may just intend to drive to the edge of life's wilderness and look in, only to find yourself driven out there by forces beyond yourself. Maybe your compassion leads you to the edge of some wilderness that others sojourn in, and you're driven by your compassion and love to go deeper, to be with them in it. There are people whose whole lives are transformed by doing more than driving to the edge and looking into the wilderness of the suffering of others. Mark doesn't tell us many details, just this. Jesus was in the wilderness 40 days, tested by Satan, and he was with the wild animals, and the angels waited on him. Matthew and Luke's Gospels say much more about the testings of Satan. Mark's contribution is the comment about the wild animals. The word in the Greek is meta. It's the same one used early in Matthew in that beloved line so familiar at Christmas, Emmanuel, which means God is with us, with meta. It's the same word that describes Jesus' proximity to wild animals. Jesus meta, the wild animals. So that's interesting, right? Is Jesus really with the wild animals in the same way God is with us as Emmanuel? Wild animals, were they tamed? Were they tamed by Jesus? Is that what Mark is saying? Maybe. And if so, there's a beautiful prophecy being recalled here, a vision in which a comprehensive shalom is possible as a peaceable kingdom brought about by the Messiah. Here again, Isaiah 11. The wolf shall lie down with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the adder's den. In this vision, the danger posed by wild animals is removed. If St. Francis is known for preaching to wild animals, Jesus, you can imagine, pets them. The key word is with, a word not only of proximity, but of intimacy, even of advocacy. Emmanuel, God with us, from Matthew, we sing at Christmas time, here in Mark, is pictured as supernatural, messianic, shalom, withness, even with wild animals. And so what we may have here is a recapitulation of Adam in the idyllic Garden of Eden as the world began. Just this time, it's Jesus in the desert wilderness. Wilderness is emblematic of what the world had become since Adam's fall. Adam lived at peace with animals. So does Jesus. Jesus is in the wilderness, and the vast wilderness of the world is transformed from a place of danger to a place of peace. If that's the story here, then Mark, which does not give us a birth narrative of Jesus, gives us a rebirth narrative of the world. This rebirth taking place in a most unlikely place, a dangerous, desolate terrain, thought devoid of divine grace or hope, until Jesus, the second Adam, comes to begin a new creation, all right there in the opening chapter of the Gospel of Mark. And I love that telling of the story. It gives me hope. It's a sign that Jesus inaugurated a peaceable kingdom. The world's wilderness has already been tamed, and we ought not fear, no matter how it feels or seems to us now. And that's a story worth holding on to, with this story of Jesus with the animals in the wilderness. But while we're here, I want to suggest even another way of reading what's going on in the story and how to receive it. And it hinges on that little word we've been talking about. The word meta can simply mean wild animals were in the area of Jesus. It can mean proximity. It can also mean with as a some kind of friendship, like Emmanuel, the wild animals with Jesus, like a petting zoo. But the word meta can also mean against in Greek. Jesus against or in conflicted relationship with the animals, or Jesus with them in a way that he better sleep with one eye open. And I know that's confusing how one word can be in English either with or against, but I'm not in charge of the Greek language. This is just how it is. If the word meta is oppositional, then what does that mean? Jesus with the wild animals evokes a kind of fear for his safety, a concern for his well-being out there with the wild animals. And I think this reading may be suggested by our Old Testament reading for today. And that story, with all those animals and Noah, I don't think the ark was all love boat. I think it was more of a floating, tenuous lifeboat for creation, held together by the courage of one man who was willing to face down everything he had to, including, surely, a reasonable fear of wild animals. All of this to be part of God's redemption project of creation. Wild animals were still wild before and after the ark. So Jesus, meta with the wild beast, can also mean what it would mean for any normal, human, vulnerable person out there in the wild. He's in danger from them. And yet he goes. And he stays. And that gives me hope too. That Jesus was willing and able to go into the world's most dangerous danger, the world's wildest wild places, the world's most desolate, hopeless, and even godless experience, and endure and redeem. Wild animals on the wilderness side of the Jordan were serious. Lions, bears, poisonous snakes. The word for wild animals can also mean flies, gnats, and bees. In other words, things that can hurt or kill you or at least drive you crazy. And this is why Jesus' experience in the wilderness may be called a time of testing and preparation for all that was to come. For the rest of his ministry, he will face down human versions of gnats, flies, and bees swarming around him in the form of Pharisees and Sadducees, buzzing with their complaints. And lions and bears in the form of the betrayal of his friends and his own wrestling with God's will for his life. He will live and move and have his being in the wilderness of human cynicism, rejection, condemnation, and sin. And he will not abandon us in our wilderness. He will stay, and he will endure, and he will redeem. 40 days in the wilderness with its dangers is serious, but it is nothing compared to the wilderness of human interaction he'll navigate for the years of his ministry. One will test him, the other will kill him. Lent remembers all of this. You may experience the disciplines and prayers of this season in beautiful ways. You may experience them as renewed intimacy with God, by cutting out some things that have a grip on you more than they should, or some other habits. You find you simplify your life in beautiful ways and rediscover a joy of knowing and following Jesus. Your wild animals have been tamed, at least for a while, and you walk with renewed focus and intimacy with God. The spiritual wilderness becomes like a new Eden as Jesus recreates you. What a gift this season can be. But you may experience the disciplines and prayers of this season as if they are a force working against you, at least in the moment. It may not bring you renewed peace and joy. It may be hard. You may find that the small thing you offer to God, no more cookies after dinner maybe, cracks open some other struggles you haven't wanted to look at in a long time. You may even find, if I may put it this way, that as Satan tempted Jesus, you feel like you are square in the sights of the great tempter. Here's the thing. You always are. You're just now aware of it when you're not such an easy mark. With or against, either way, this time is no ordinary time. God will use whatever you submit, whatever you offer and make available, whatever that is, God will use it to prepare you for what's to come in your life. Everything in God's mercy is redeemable for God's purposes. So, let us do more than drive to the edge and look in. Let us let God drive us deeper into the wild than we ever knew, and find one way or another that in doing that we are drawn deeply into the heart of God. Let us take up our cross and lose ourselves. Amen.